are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this wonderful place we call Earth. Thanks for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. Some of you are joining us for the very first time. Welcome aboard. I am glad you're here, and I think you'll be glad as well. I hope you make a habit out of it. Have you heard the news about Gary McKinnon? Gary McKinnon, of course, is the man who has admitted breaking in, hacking in to all of these government computers, and here in the United States, and he's in Britain. Well, the U.S. government has been actively trying to extradite him to the United States for trial, and everywhere he has turned for trying to block that has not worked. But he has now been granted by the courts in Great Britain, he has now been granted the right to challenge extradition. So the saga goes forward. The saga moves on. It's interesting to see. It will be interesting to see how all that turns out. Now, also in Great Britain, Nick Pope. Well, you know Nick Pope. Nick is the guy who ran the United Kingdom version of the X-Files, the real X-Files, for the Ministry of Defense. He's making the news. He says that there were orders to, in certain cases, to try to shoot down UFOs, and that they did attempt to do so and had no luck with it. He also said, and I saw this in a video clip of a news interview that he did on Fox News. He said that there are reports that, you know, they actually had jets that engaged in dogfights with these UFOs. Well, that's pretty interesting as well, don't you think? And on top of that, I mean, that was an interesting thing, but the Fox News anchors were pretty interesting because they were obviously so incredibly deep in ignorance. They simply had no clue. And it, you know, and in fact, the female anchor said, Nick Pope, what was he? He was actually a government, ex-government official. He was head of the MOD's UFO investigations. And then she said, who knew they even had that? Well, everyone except major media, dear. Everyone except major media. I commend Fox for doing the report. I commend them for putting it on the air. But, geez, come on, guys. At least get up to speed on the most basic information that has been around for decades. Really. Tonight, my guest is John Vasquez. And John was a soldier in 1977 when at Fort Benning. He says that he and about 13 other soldiers were involved in a UFO attack. He's been with us before and shared that story with us before. He is now researching looking into a reported UFO crash near Fort Benning in which it is said a UFO was recovered. We'll be talking about all that this evening when we come back from this break. Welcome back. It is my distinct pleasure and privilege to welcome John Vasquez back to the show. John, welcome back. We're glad to have you.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Smith, and I really appreciate coming on your show again. I have to mention something, Paul, is that I do have a slight cough, and I am under the weather, so to speak. So if I start coughing or something like that, please excuse me. I don't mean to, kind of skip the discussion we're going to have tonight. So bear with me, please.
I'll do it. You are out. I'm having a little audio situation here. You don't know this. Last night, and our audience doesn't know this. Last night, we came under attack online just as the show started. And it got pretty serious, including someone hacking into some stuff and changing some passwords and so forth. And while the audience was viewing some videos that I had playing, I was feverishly working to get us back up to par. And so some of the things have been moved and reset and not where they normally are. And so tonight I'm having to adjust them as we go to get them back to normal here. Okay, John, you're out in the California area, right?
Yes, I'm in San Diego.
Okay, I spent the weekend down in the Hollywood area, and it rained the whole time we were there. It was raining, and it was overcast, and, sometimes it was a kind of a hard rain, and sometimes it was just sort of a slow sprinkle. What's the weather been like in San Diego? What's it like there today?
Today it was kind of cold and gloomy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to get cold again. It's going to be going down to about maybe, 49 or something around there, 50. So it's going to be kind of a real cold night tonight.
All right. And I think people in Wisconsin would think that's a heat wave. But for you and for me and for all of us who live where it's normally pretty hot, that's cold weather.
Yes, it is.
All right, John, we may get into your experience, your situation that you had back in Fort Benning in 1977. We might get into that some tonight, but I really would like for us to, just sort of jump right on into this UFO crash that's been talked about as happening near Fort Benning. So let me just begin with, when did this happen? When was it supposed to have happened?
Well, I found a date this incident did happen was on November 28, 2006. And I found out that this incident was just posted on December 9, 2008. So they took some time to post this information into the computer through the Internet. And I've been looking into this the last 3 days now and reading the reports on this. And apparently it's in Columbus, Georgia, just off the U.S. Highway 80 in the wooded area behind Platt and Whitley, an unusual bell-shaped object was seen by witnesses. And most of the scores of police and fire department, FAA, WTVM, Channel 9 News, military personnel from Fort Benning, and also the report says that they all kind of used helicopters also around that area looking for this object. They did find something of an object or a craft and used trucks to remove this object, and witnesses also are saying this object was shiny, silvery object. So, you know, what they've done is perhaps took it to the base, Army base, Fort Benning, and decided to open this object or this craft to see what was inside. And I spoke to Mr. Stanton Freeman a couple of days ago, and we came to the conclusion that it's possible that they had bodies involved.
All right, we'll get into that in just a moment. Let's go back to these witnesses. You say there were witnesses that saw this thing crash, so that would mean that they saw it while it was still airborne. Did they say anything about noise? Did they hear any engine noise?
They didn't mention anything about any noise. It was a silent object. No reports were written down about any sound being made by this object at all.
Okay, now you said it was shiny. What color?
On the ground, when they saw it on the ground, on the trucks, silvery, shiny object.
All right, now how many witnesses were there as far as we know? I mean, how many are reporting this?
Well, I have two witnesses as of right now on the internet. Both of them are PhDs, and what kind of credibility they may have, I'm not sure yet, but then apparently they do have some credibility because of their background. They've been interviewed by the chief of police and the fire department and everybody else, and other witnesses have also been interviewed, and the other witnesses are in the city area. So this object flew around for a while, it was moving around the area of Fort Benning itself and Columbus, and all of a sudden it just came down to the ground.
All right, now the witnesses that are reporting this, are they, you said there's two of them that and they have PhDs. Did it say what their PhDs are in?
No, they don't say that in the report at all, what kind of PhDs.
Mm-hmm.
They're reporting also after this incident, days later, unusual unmarked airplane, 727, a white plane was taking off. And reports tell that this white plane was never reported on the records. So
When you say it was not reported on the records, what are we talking about, at the airport?
Yes, sir. National UFO Records Center did an extensive report on this, and they don't say there was any records of this plane being reported.
Did it take off from a civilian airport, or did it take off from Fort Benning?
Civilian airport.
Okay, and
it's been missed by those two PhDs, and I have to ask questions on the airport areas, because both of the airport has radars, and they couldn't pick up any kind of strike on their radars concerning this object they picked up. However, one of the news reporters or news station has their own radar screen, and they did have a strike on there. So again, there's different kind of answers to this questions that I've been asking. Is this a true story about some unusual event going on at Fort Benning, or was this just kind of stage event? And that can happen, because I know what happened to us back in 77, and I have some other things to question about that.
All right, now it's not unusual for FAA radar to not be able to pick up these UFOs. We hear about them all the time. They say, no, we didn't get anything. And up until a few months ago, I've always assumed they were lying and covering up. But then I had John Callahan on the show. John Callahan was the number two man in the FAA until he retired. And he explained that the way the new system works, the system they have now, the way it works, it's specifically programmed to not pick up anything that doesn't have a transponder. And it'll simply show a comma or a period. That's it, a comma or a period. That's all it shows. And so it doesn't paint the object and show you its relative size or anything like that. And I'm not really sure that's a really smart way to run radar, but that's what they've got and that's what they're using. And so when they say, we didn't see anything on radar, they're telling you the truth. It's programmed so they won't. And but weather radar is not so programmed. And so the news station, having its radar, would pick up something in the air like that. All right, now let's talk about what the witnesses said as to this object. The object flies across the sky. It's up there for quite some time, and then it crashes to the ground.
Yes, and they had a search going at that time with helicopters.
Okay, now, after it crashed. Is that right? After it crashed is when they started searching with the helicopters.
With the helicopters. They were already airborne, I believe, and they were searching for this object. And, of course, the report from the police chief or fire department chief is that, no, they didn't find anything at all in that area where this object crashed. So, again, there's a denial going on about this. And, again, going back to this object, they got trucks out there, military trucks, to pick up this object.
Now, how do we know that?
Fort Benning personnel were also present. And Fort Benning personnel, what kind of rank they were, it doesn't say. What department.
Yeah, but where is this information coming from? From the witnesses?
This is from an internet called disclosed.tv and also from WTV.
Yeah, but John, they have to be quoting someone. Who are they quoting?
Right. Well, it's, I'm assuming they were quoting what the chief was fire chief was saying or the police department were telling them.
Okay, so the police department told them that there were military trucks.
Military trucks, well, it doesn't say military, but there were trucks out there and also military personnel and also some unidentified personnel. They didn't know who they were, but they were unidentified personnel.
All right, now the witnesses, how close did they get to this thing?
Well, they didn't get that close. They just saw it and their car broke down when they got close to this object.
So their car quit running?
Quit working, yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it just died.
Okay, so how do they describe what it looked like on the ground?
Well, as the report says, as for them, they I believe said it looked like a bell shape. Others said it looked like a meteor. Others said it looks like a saucer. So it's like different varieties of shapes and colors that was emanating from this object.
Well, you know, the bell shape brings to mind the Kecksburg incident, because the Kecksburg incident, everyone said it was kind of a bell-shaped or acorn-shaped craft that crashed there. Military personnel came in, put it on trucks, carted it away.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it sounds very similar to Kecksburg.
Similar, yeah.
You have some witnesses that are saying it was bell-shaped and others saying that it was a saucer shape.
There's a lot of different variation to this object. And I have to go with the one that says bell-shaped because, I'm not sure if it turned into a saucer. How does it change its shape like that? Or a meteor, a fireball, they call it. In the southern area, they always call things like, "Oh, it's fireball," you know. And it's different shapes, But the bell shape sounds familiar to me, too, because I know I heard that once before, and you just brought it up. So I have to go with what they say is a bell-shaped-like object that dropped from the sky.
All right, now, they carted it off. The military comes in. Somebody comes in with some trucks, and they load this thing on the trucks, and they cart it off. Did the witnesses watch them load it onto the truck?
Yes, apparently some of the homes that was close to the base saw several military trucks, maybe one or two at the most, carrying off this object, and they said it was a bright, silvery object.
And where did the trucks take this object? Where is it today?
It was in Fort Benning for a while until maybe a couple of days later, 3 or 4 days later, they put it into this unmarked airplane, painted all white, no markings, no numbers, and flew off to some unknown destination.
How big was this object?
The size of this object doesn't say how big it was, but it was I have to go back to what I remember back in 77. It's about the size of a Volkswagen.
Okay, a Volkswagen Beetle, huh?
Beetle.
Mm-hmm. Those are fun cars, too.
I had one of those, 65.
Yeah. All right, so we've got this object picked up by the military on trucks. They cart it into Fort Benning. A couple of days later, it's flown out on an airplane with no markings that's painted all white. Now, did the witnesses, did they see them loaded onto the airplane? How did they know it was on the airplane?
I don't think they saw it being loaded into the plane, but
they're speculating then that that's what was on the plane.
And again, when they try to get close to this object or this plane itself, the car broke down again.
All right, so do you have any idea what year, make, and model of the car?
No, I don't. There's no information about what kind of car they were driving, what year it was, and information when it comes to right now is just partial information, but there's a lot of information on the National UFO Record Center, and I've been looking over that carefully for about the last hour and a half, and they did an extensive inquiry onto this, and they did contact University of Alabama, they contacted NASA, they contacted several other agencies to find out what was this thing about, and also the governor's office, apparently, and they all came back with a response that this was something that could have been nothing more than a meteor.
Well, at least they didn't say it was weather balloons.
No.
Yeah, that's a step forward. All right, look, we have a break coming up here in just a few seconds.
Uh-huh.
And when we come back from this break, I quite naturally will have more questions about this. When we come back, I want you to tell us how you got involved in this. How did you find out about it and how you got involved in it? And we'll get that when we come back right after this break, folks. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is John Vasquez. John, before we went away for break, I proposed a question. Let me restate it for those who may just be joining us. And the question is, how did you become involved in trying to research this reported crash? What is it that got you into this?
On Friday, I was just browsing through the computer, and you know, I was looking at certain stories about what else there is about, you know, any UFO crashes on a computer. And one came up and said Fort Benning, Georgia, or Columbus, Georgia. It was a down UFO, a crash UFO. So I looked into that, was it the website called Disclose.tv? Showed up on a website, and I read the report, and I saw this picture. They took a picture of this object. It's a round object, and it looks like it's a meteor, but it has some outline to it, you know, and it looks like a craft.
All right, now, this photograph of the object, is this a photograph with the object in the air, or is it on the ground after it crashed?
It's in the air.
Okay.
In the air.
And obviously it was taken by one of these witnesses that reported it. Do you know if they took this photograph with a cell phone camera or if they used a regular digital camera or one with film? How did they take this photo? Do you know?
Well, I have to assume again that they took it with a digital camera.
Okay.
This is back in 06, and I'm sure we had digital camera then.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I wish I was there to see this and investigate this myself, because I know Fort Benning. I know what happened to us back in 77, and this would be one of the stepping stones for me to make some kind of conclusion that some unusual things are happening at Fort Benning at this time.
Do you think this craft originated from Fort Benning, or do you think this craft originated off-planet? I mean, is this a terrestrial or extraterrestrial craft? Now, just based on, I know I'm asking you to speculate, mm-hmm. but just based on what you found out so far, what do you think?
Well, my belief is this. At that time, back in 77, all of us saw something very, very unusual, something that I don't believe that it came from our military at all. It was so unusual and so bizarre. And to look at this object or this picture right now, I believe it's the same thing we saw, all of us, in this formation.
So it looks like what you saw in 77?
Yes, sir.
And, all right, and that will lead us into some discussion of what happened to you back in 77, but let me ask you this. Do you think that the object that you saw in this event back in 1977 was terrestrial or extraterrestrial?
Extraterrestrial.
Okay.
It was too bizarre to even say it was terrestrial at all, because the way it moved, the way it functioned, the way it chased us after us and came for us, and I don't think we had anything like that back in 77 at all. I don't think so. I don't think we had anything that advanced at all.
All right. Now, you mentioned that you had had a conversation with Stanton Friedman about this, and Stanton is someone who appears on this show from time to time, and someone that I think a lot of our audience, and probably most of our audience, has a great deal of respect for. And you said that you and he came to the conclusion that this craft, now I want to be clear about this, did you say that this craft had bodies in it, or probably had bodies in it, or possibly had bodies?
I said that it could have bodies.
Could have.
Could have. Because, I mean, the military take this into the base, you know, someone's going to be bound to try to find out what's inside this craft or whatever the object is and crack it open. And during that, you know, maybe they found bodies laying there inside, mm-hmm. you know, and they didn't want to talk about it for a long time or even report this at all. So,
Now, back in 1977, you were at Fort Benning. Why were you there?
Training, combat training, AIT, Advanced Infantry Training.
All right, and so what is this, a six-week training program?
Yes, sir. It's a 6 to 8 week training course that we have to go through, because then this was 1977. It's right after Vietnam, and our training course was building up to for us to go back to Vietnam again.
All right. Now, I don't think it's really necessary for us to go through all the details of what you experienced back in 77, but I think we should go through some of them because many of our audience did not hear that show simply because of the fact that we have a whole lot of new audience all the time. But back in 77, you're there for AIT. You and the other guys, the 1,300 other guys, are called out onto the parade grounds. You're standing at attention. You're about to be addressed by your commanding officer. Am I right so far?
Yes, that's correct.
All of a sudden, this object appears, and there's a streak of light.
Yes, there's a star on the right-hand side, and the guy who was standing in front of me was telling me, look at the star, and I said, well, you know, it's really actually just a star I'm looking at, and then, sure enough, after a few minutes or a few seconds, the star moved, and normally stars don't move, they just stay stationary. Well, this thing moved, and it went across the sky. And the way it went across the sky is like kind of picture an ice cube in your hands, and you see a stainless steel floor, and you put that ice cube on a floor, and you push it across that floor, and it's so smooth, it just kind of, you know, there's no rigid movement at all. I mean, it's just so smooth. And that's the way this object moved across the sky, and it stopped, went away, came back, and moved across the sky again, and it stopped. It did the same thing, came back, and about this time, our company commander was stepping away from his building and walking up to this podium to make some, you know, announcements about this training course. And what happened next is that I hear this rushing noise to my left, and I know I'm not supposed to move, but then I kind of leaned backwards a little bit to see what was going on my left, and I see Charlie Company men running out of formation. Others were standing still, and I see this bright, intense light descending, coming down a dirt road. And I'm thinking, wow, that must be some kind of helicopter, and I want to take a better look at this thing. So I leaned forward to take a look at this, and by now, it's kind of lower to the ground, and it's about the height of a truck with one light broken or off. And I was going to ask this guy who was just talking about this bike. I was going to say something to him, and he was asleep, standing.
And this condition of everyone being asleep, I mean, it kind of hit everyone, didn't it?
Oh, it had kind of really the whole battalion. There's 13 people out there, and it hit the whole battalion, and it was moving fast. And I don't know what happened to me up at this time, but I became unconscious. When I came to, I was aware of what was going, I guess, around me, and I was looking downwards at my boots, and I couldn't move. So I turned to my right, and I saw my friend running away, and I yelled at him to come back and help me, and he did, and we started screaming at each other, where's the captain, where's the captain? And I noticed a lot of others were still standing around, and some of us were running away from formation, taking cover. And I'm screaming at my buddy, where's the captain, where's the captain? And we went to go see him, and he's standing behind his podium, and he's asleep. And we tried to wake him up, and he didn't wake up.
When you guys then ran for cover, you took cover under a building, didn't you?
Yes. There's a 2-foot-high crawl space under these buildings. And these buildings were made back in 1940s and 50s with huge windows, two stories, wooden buildings. They still have them, at least some here in San Diego.
But they don't have them right there at that spot in Fort Benning any longer, do they?
No, sir, they don't.
There's a building there now. What's the name of that building?
Well, they re-landscaped the whole place and built a brand new building now, and these buildings are called Starships.
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 Well, that's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
All right. Now, as the story unfolds, I mean, that's not the only event. What happened after you took cover was that you guys came under attack, didn't you?
Yes, we did.
And let's see. Yeah, we've got a little bit of time before break. Let's get into that. All right, tell us about this attack.
About this attack, what's happened after this first incident, which was an abduction, and then the company commander and everybody else took us out to this campsite about 8 miles away from this barracks area we were at.
Now, was this the next day or 2 or 3 days later?
2 or 3 days later.
Okay.
They took us marching out to this campsite, and some other unusual things were happening there, and we stayed out there for about a week and a half, came back to our barracks, and...
Well, what kind of unusual things were happening out there?
At the campsite?
Yeah.
Well, there was one time when we were talking to the Green Berets, because they came over to our camp and told us, hey, you need to follow our orders, and... we told them, no, we can't, because so many unusual things were happening to us right now. And sure enough, when we walked away from the Green Berets, we went to this dirt road area, and one of us had a flare gun. And he fired that flare gun, and we saw this flash of light. And I didn't know what it was. It's just a strong flash of light. So we started walking back to where our tent was, which I know that we built our tent on this open field, and when we got to this open field, all the tents were gone.
So all right, now you say you saw a flash of light. Was this flash of light caused by the flare gun?
I think so. I believe that it did cause some kind of friction. I can say it's a friction. And we walked back to our tent area, and our tents were all gone. And, we stood out there in that open field for a while, and we were wondering what happened to our den, and we tried to go back to the road, but we couldn't, because there was something blocking us. I don't know how to call this. I guess an invisible wall or something. And we tried to move ourselves away from this invisible wall, which we did, and started walking back to the road again, because we wanted to, I don't know, we're afraid of the open field with this invisible wall, and when we got to the road, two guys took off from our formation. And I was asking my friend, what were they doing now? And they said, they're going to go see what's over there at that area we were at just once before, you know. And I said, why? You know, he told me that there was some people over there. And I said, people? So I kind of looked around, and sure enough, there was a bunch of guys standing around in a kind of a shadow figure.
All right, we have to take a break, and we'll pick up right there when we come back. Ladies and gentlemen, John Vasquez. We'll be back right after this. My guest is John Vasquez. Now, John, when we went away for break, you were telling us about this. You finally made your way out of the field, and you saw some guys standing at another location, and there was some kind of a shadowy figure is what I picked up on. But if that's not correct, well, correct me, and we'll go from there.
Yes, and we'll go back to us standing in the road again, and... We're back in the road after this open field. We're standing there, and two people in our formation took off running away from our formation. And I asked one of my buddies, Jones, asked him, where are those two guys going? You know, and he said, well, he wanted, those two guys wanted to go see what those shadow people look like, and they're standing right over there where we were just standing. And I said, what shadow people? I really didn't understand what he was talking about. But I kind of told Jones, why don't you just call those two guys back? And what you did, and those two guys came back, and they were telling us something so bizarre, I did not believe what they were telling me. They were telling me and everybody else in this formation that we're in this dirt road, they were saying, that's us. That's us over there in this dark area, and the shadows were us. And, I'm looking at these two guys, and I'm trying, they must lost their mind or something happened to them after that first flash. And you know, I wanted to go see it, these people that he was talking about or whatever it was. And I walked over there just halfway, and oh, my God, it was us. I see the faces. And so that Jones and everybody, some other guys who walked with us, and we saw the faces. And it's us standing in a circle.
So what do you make of that? How does that happen?
I have no idea, but we're standing there looking at us over there. And I said, oh, my God, let's get the, bling bling out of here and get that get back to the road. My body was tingling. I mean, I was shivering. This is so unbelievable, you know, and it's even now unbelievable to talk about this. And it's hard because nobody believes in this kind of things happening to, you know, normal folks who just going to go basic training and that's it. And training is that's all you're going to get. But to see this kind of event, I mean, what do you call it? Time split? Time warp? I don't know. I'm not it. I don't know anything about
well,
it.
I think when you called it bizarre, you called it the right thing. It is bizarre.
It is bizarre. I mean, you see yourself standing there looking at yourself, and that whoever that person is that you is looking at you. And I told Jones and everybody else, let's get back to the road. And of course, you know, we basically ran back to the road, and one of us screaming to Wilson, who had the flare gun, to fire that flare gun, fire that flare gun. And we were telling ourselves, lock and load, and give it warning. And when Wilson fired that flare gun again, this time there was another flash. And that kind of blinded me for sure, because I couldn't see until maybe seconds later, and I'm blinking my eyes, and I'm hoping that we're back in the same time frame or something. And when we started walking back to this open area, this time there were tents. I see tents all around the open field.
All right, now let me get this straight. When you say we started walking back to this open area, and this time there were tents, this is the place where you had set up your tents originally?
Yes, that's the place, open field.
We same place, but when you were there before, there were no tents.
Well, again, there were tents already built, and when we took off to the road, when we went to see that Green Beret captain, you know, we told him, well, we can't make it with you guys. We walked away from him and went to the dirt road, and that's when this event started to happen.
Okay, but you had left tents, and when you came back to them, there were no tents. You left. When you came back this time, the tents were there again.
The tents were there again.
And everything was where it was supposed to be? It was as you had left it?
Yeah, the tents were right where it was supposed to be. And then when we went back on top of the hill, there's this Green Beret captain racing out of the woods, and he's screaming at us and yelling at us, and he was upset. And he's telling us, where were you guys at? 1 minute, you were gone. Next second, you come back. I mean, where were you guys? I mean, I didn't have no answers. That.
Do you have any answers to it today?
Huh?
Do you have any answer to that today?
Again, I have no idea. Maybe we went through some kind of time split. I don't know, time tunnel. I, I have no idea. I had nothing, no understanding about this, about the time that things happened right now.
All right. Now, this happened on the grounds of Fort Benning, right?
On the grounds in Fort Benning, and this was out about 8, in this camp area happened about 8 miles out away from our barracks. Wooded area. Very much wooded area.
Okay. So you found your tents again, and then what happens?
Well, after the tent, we came back. The tents were all there. We went up this hill, and again the this Green Beret captain, again, he was upset, and he was asking us a bunch of questions about what happened to you guys. And excuse me. I'm sorry. I got this cough. You know, he's upset too. He's asking him again a hundred questions about what happened to you guys. Where were you? And do you know what time it is? And it's like you guys were gone for 5 hours or something. But I wasn't looking at my watch. I'm assuming that we were gone for 5 hours.
Did it feel like you had been gone for 5 hours?
Yeah, I'm assuming that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I wasn't looking at my watch. But we were gone for a long time, that's what he was telling us. But he said, yeah, one second you were at the road, and next minute you guys were gone. Then you come back.
Did you get into any trouble for that?
No. We told the captain what happened on the road. Other than that, we didn't say anything else because I wasn't sure. Anyway, I didn't talk to him. Some other guys did. I didn't know how to explain it to this captain, what happened.
So no one told him what you had actually just experienced?
I don't think so. I don't think nobody told him.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming, again, I have to assume someone did, but I know I didn't say nothing more than, well, I don't know. You know, we were there.
All right. Did you have any other strange things happen to you while you were out on this training exercise, out where the tents are?
Some more other strange things happening was when we took off from the camp to go for a short run, we end up at some area where I know that we were chased after by a helicopter, and it was our helicopter, and they were searching for us. And out of nowhere, there was this bright, intense light show up in the woods. So, I don't know, we felt comfortable with this light showing up in the woods, and we told them, we told ourselves, run to that light. Run to that light, which we did. And what happened next is that we ended up on a hillside somewhere, about 300, 400 yards away from the tree lines, in a circle formation, and when we came to became alert about what happened, we're looking at the helicopters about 300, 400, or maybe 600 yards away from us, searching and looking for us with their searchlights, and we're standing on top of this hillside, open field hillside.
And you don't actually remember going to the top of this hillside?
No. No. I know that we ran into this light, bright light.
This is bizarre indeed.
It is.
Yeah. All right, we've got about 30 seconds here before we go to break. And look, when we come back, I want us to get into this UFO attack. Mm-hmm. Where there were people that actually got injured.
Yes.
In this. And then we'll... after we explore that a bit, we'll open up the telephone lines and allow people to call in and ask you questions or make comments or whatever. But this is one of the most fascinating stories that I've ever heard, one of the most fascinating accounts I've ever heard of a UFO type encounter. And I hear them all the time. Yours is On the interest meter, I have to rank it 10 out of 10. It's just fascinating and bizarre. All right, folks, we will be back right after this. When we went away for break, John, we left you guys on the side of a hill. You didn't know how you'd gotten there. Helicopters are looking for you. This is now the second time you guys have disappeared from the main group, right?
This is the second time that we disappeared. And how to explain that? I have no explanation, really. It just happened. And when we're on a hillside, I know we discussed what happened, and we were aware that these helicopters were searching for us, and we told ourselves, we need to get out of here real fast before something else happened to us.
All right, now, how much time passed between that event and the event where you guys came under attack by a UFO?
Yes, that's maybe after that incident or that episode happened to us, this bizarre episode. We went back to our camp, and maybe at least a day or two later, our commanding officer, General Icy, showed up, and he was upset because we're young people, young kids actually, 23 years old, the oldest. Carrying live ammunition, and his concern was that he wanted the live ammunition now. And, we said, sure, as long as we could go back to our barracks and forget about what just happened. And he agreed, and he brought some cattle. Next morning, there were some cattle trucks waiting for us, and after breakfast, we all rode the cattle truck, went back to our barracks like nothing happened. And I didn't want to think about it at all after that. And when we got to our barracks, we put away our gears and made sure that everything was cleaned. And, that night, while we were getting ready for bed, all of us, the whole battalion that was there, the lights in the buildings, flickered off and on, and I thought, excuse me, I'm sorry. The lights started flickering off and on, and I thought, anyway, I guess one of the people was joking around or doing something with the lights, and they're all saying to me, no, John, it must be the Georgia Gas and Electric Company and having some problems with their connection or something. And, I didn't think nothing of it. And when we decided to go to bed, all of us, the lights started flicking off and on again. And it started getting faster and faster. And it's like a strobe light. By the time we started moving away from the building, I said, what is going on here? That's another unusual, bizarre thing happening. And all of us walked away from our building, went to a supply building to pick up helmets, live ammunition, M16s, and web gear, and all these good things. And we started walking away from our post slowly, and we could see the lights flashing off and on all the buildings. And when we walked down the road, the paved road, we saw a jeep coming up the road, and we all stopped. And
I'm sorry, you saw what coming up the road?
A jeep.
A jeep.
A jeep.
Okay.
Coming up the road, and we didn't know why this jeep was doing in the dark, what's it doing in the dark, and it's just driving up the road with toward us. And of course, the front light was on, the headlights were on, and about four of us, five of us, walked to the jeep, and we were surprised to see the commanding officer, General Icy, sitting there, and he had a gunner and a jeep and a driver, and he's asking questions, what's going on? And we talk, well, sir, it's something's happening to the 1st Battalion post, lights, that's, and he saw it flashing off and on. And he told all of us to go down to the end of the crossroad and meet him there. So we did that. We walked away from our barracks, and when we met him at the crossroad down the hill, he told us, I want all of you to get yourself ready, lock and load, and go back up the hill and take the building. Well, we had to follow orders, and sure enough, all of us went back to the to this paved road, and during walking back to the paved road, there were tanks in the area too, and we found that out real quick, and we got to the top of the hill and moved ourselves, the whole battalion, into this gully, and we had binoculars, and we're laying around there. We had radio, and we're in contact with General Icy, and we were looking through our binoculars, and across from us, which is about 100 yards from the gully to the other end, which is the tree lines, we could see figures with our binoculars scurrying right back to the tree or passing across one tree to another. And we're thinking, who are these guys? You know, they're moving really fast. We didn't know what it was, but it looked like human beings. They were moving. It's like they weren't using the legs or anything. They were just moving across the hill or something really fast, hiding behind the trees. And we have some choppers out there, and we radioed our choppers to drop some flares around the trees, in which they did, and they got fired upon.
But when you say they got fired upon, what was fired at them?
A ball of light.
And where did that come from?
Sir?
Where did that come from?
From the tree lines.
Okay.
These ball of lights came from the trees. And we told command about it, and the command told us to start firing. Let them know that we're here. So we did that, and it was like both sides were firing at each other. They're firing some kind of ball of light. Never seen it before. It was a strange-looking ball of light.
How big is the ball?
About the size of, oh, gosh. Looked like the size of...
size of grapefruit. A baseball? Grapefruit?
Grapefruit.
Okay.
About the size of grapefruit.
All right.
You know, it was just shooting right across us, and we're firing M16s at them, and it was hitting the trees. We're hitting the trees and whatever else that was behind the trees, and you know, I could see some falling, but they're getting up too. So I don't know what they were.
So whenever some of them fell, none of the ones that fell stayed on the ground.
No, they got right up and moved away again. So I don't know what we were firing at, but it seems like they weren't affected by our M16s.
Now this is nighttime, so you don't have good vision.
No.
But when the flares were dropped, were you able to see what these things looked like?
At times, we thought we saw some, humans. I mean, people.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, the flares drop in and. And the way the flare flickers in the sky, you know, it kind of brights up this area a little bit. Half of it's dark and the other half is still light. That's how the flare works. And when it came down to the tree lines, it's like, you know, there's something moving around there. You see something moving around. It's like humans moving around or running around. I don't know. But we're hitting them. I know we were hitting them. And they were firing up after we hit them. They were firing back at us.
With these balls of light?
Balls of light.
All right, now, did these balls of light hit any of the soldiers in your group?
Yes, they did. And some of the guys had, like, a red mark with yellow spotches on their bodies, and we poured water over it because they were screaming, it burns, so we poured water over it, and that water didn't help at all. It just, the water just vaporized. You know, I don't know.
What time of night was this?
I'm sorry, sir?
What time at night was this?
Oh, this was about, what, 8:30, 9 o'clock at night?
Mm-hmm. And that's what time when it started. Now, you said your whole battalion was in this gully, right?
Yes, we were in
right,
a gully.
Now, a battalion is 1,200, 1,300 guys, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And one side of it, left side of us, had Alpha and Bravo. Charlie was up front, and Delta was on our right-hand side in this gully. So we had a kind of horseshoes type of formation in this gully. So we covered ourselves. And in our back, they cleared the area for the LZ landing zone,
yeah,
for the choppers, so they could drop off more ammo or whatever.
All right. Now, how long did this battle continue?
Well, it lasted a long time because I know we were out there, gosh, I can assume it was about for 3 hours.
Okay. At any point, did you see a UFO?
Yes, we did. All of us did. We saw one that was like a omelet-shaped, white, bright, intense light, glowing, and it was moving into the trees.
All right. Now, what do you mean omelet-shaped?
Omelet-shaped type a UFO, and it was.
You mean oval-shaped? You mean oval?
Yeah, oval-shaped, like omelet, oval-shaped omelet.
All right. And it moved into the trees?
Yeah, it was cruising between the trees. It was cruising between the trees, and the guy who was standing behind one of our tanks was on the phone, and we told him, why don't you ask the tank commander to fire his weapon on him, and he did. He hit it.
And what happened?
It sounded like the way it sounded is like if you get a baseball bat and you get several pillowcases and you smack it real hard, it sounds like a dud.
Uh-huh.
Like a boom, like dud, you know?
And that's what
it
sounded like.
Sounded like when a tank hit it.
And what happened after he hit
but
it?
What happened next was just blinked out. Just blinked out.
Okay, the UFO just blinked out.
The UFO just blinked out.
All right. And did you see, at any point, did you see a UFO again, or is that it?
No, that was it. That's the only time I saw this huge UFO cruising in the trees. And we were still firing at our weapons into the trees and started a fire, you know.
So by firing into that tree line, your weapons started a fire out there.
Yeah, because of the hot lead.
Uh-huh. And what? Another question about the UFO, and then I'll move on to something else here. But the UFO, you said it was huge. How big?
Well, about the size of about the size of a two and a half ton truck.
Okay.
No,
all right.
2.5 ton truck.
So, how many feet across would you say this UFO was?
That was about from where we were standing.
No. The UFO itself. How many feet across was the UFO?
Oh, the UFO itself, it was a good size, about 15 feet, 20 feet.
Okay.
In length.
All right. Did it have, or were you able to see if it had any type of a cockpit configuration, someplace where the pilot would be seated, or was it just smooth?
No, it was just completely smooth. You couldn't see nothing but this brightness, and it was smooth brightness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like you could touch it, and it's just so smooth. Your hands will go slipping right through this thing.
John, tell us about the people who got injured.
The people who got injured was from people in Charlie Company, and they were up front, so they were getting hurt real bad. We call the choppers to pick up the guys in a LZ, which is landing zone, take them to Martin Army Hospital. And there were plenty of us who took off. I mean, left our battalion. What happened during that time frame is that that the guys who were screaming and yelling about what's happening to them, I felt sorry for these guys. I mean, I really did. Because I got hit, too, in my right leg by this ball of light. And it burned, really burned. I was out for about an hour.
Do you have any residual problems with that today?
Well, as far as I know, my left knee has a scar. I don't know where that came from, but when I took an X-ray on it, the doctor told me that I had a torn cartilage on my left knee. I don't know how that happened, but it's torn cartilage, and it's been fixed up really nice, smooth, cleared there, all the debris in it.
Well, I want to make sure I understand this. You got hit with one of these balls of light on your left leg, left knee.
No, my right leg.
Your right leg. Mm-hmm. But your left knee...
Yeah.
You've had torn cartilage, but when they did the X-ray, the doctor said it's been repaired?
Repaired.
And you don't recall ever having the surgery?
Uh-uh. No.
What about where this ball of light hit you? Do you have any scarring or burns or anything like that today?
Well, I had burns when it hit me. Mm-hmm. It was like a red mark with yellowish splotches here and there.
Mm-hmm.
And it knocked me out for about an hour. And the guys who were around me woke me up and told me, John, you okay? And I said, fine, but it burned still. And they saw it, and they said, well, just lay here for a while and see what happens next.
Well, what happened next?
Well, what happened next is, this is more bizarre, too. And by now, it's really late. And, they were saying, hey, these guys, we see something underneath the building, all the buildings. There's something crawling around the building where the dark buildings are, or at least where the darkness is. And we're saying to ourselves, well, let's go see what this thing is. And a lot of us kind of crawled over to the buildings and to see what was going on over there in the first building with this Alpha Company building. And... sure enough, when we started crawling underneath there, we see these shadowy figures crawling around all over the place. And we're telling ourselves, what is that? And somebody threw a flare or something, a flash or a flare, and it kind of blinded us. But then we saw something bizarre, like a creature with huge deformed heads. Stringy-like creatures, real thin, wiry looking, and the head was noticeable because it was deformed.
Deformed in what way?
Well, it had lumps on them, huge mm-hmm. lumps.
All right, now these creatures did not then look like the pictures we see of what they call the gray. Aliens?
I think you put a little more reality into those pictures. You'll notice that their skin's kind of rubberish. I really can't explain how would another texture of the skin would look like from this thing, because it looked to me at that time rubberish, kind of gray rubberish look to it. Not that gray. Everybody thinks it's a real gray, gray, gray kind of uh-huh. thing, but it's not. It's kind of rubberish, but light gray. It's like a skin, almost like a skin, but it's rubberish.
Right. How tall were these creatures? I know they were crawling, but you could estimate how tall they would be.
I see about 5 foot, maybe a little less than 5 foot.
And how many of them were there, crawling around under the building?
Yeah, they were advancing on us, and we started to stop them right there, dead cold. And they saw us, and we saw them. And somebody threw a flare, and that's when I hear screaming going on, and everybody saying, "Get out! Get out! Get out!" A lot of us did get out of there, and that's when somebody saying something like they want to talk to us.
Who wanted to talk to you? These beings?
They wanted to talk to us.
They did.
Yeah.
All right. And did they talk to you?
Well, they wanted to talk to the person who was in charge of the whole thing. And we told the commanding officer about this, and he wanted to talk to them.
And so did he?
Yeah, he did.
And what happened?
Well, I guess the whole thing stopped. Whatever it was that we were encountering, it stopped.
So what do you make of this, John? Do you think that...
Yeah. And, I looked into this very carefully. I also examined everything that was there when it comes to information. And I go back to several things, at least four things, I think. And one is this. It could have been a test or experimental command from Fort Hood, Texas, combined with a mass, mass psychological testing, which was brought on by U.S. Army from Springfield, Virginia. They do that every time. Some kind of test. Some kind of evaluation.
All right. So are you of the opinion that this was not a real UFO? Are you of the opinion that it is a real UFO?
Well, my opinion is that whatever that ball I hit me was real. I felt the pain.
Mm-hmm.
The burn. Especially the burn. That part was very painful. Maybe pass out.
It left a mark on you.
Well,
at the time.
At that time, yeah. At that time, it had a mark, a kind of reddish, a red mark with yellowish spots.
How long did you wear that mark? How long did it stay with you?
It didn't stay long. It just kind of faded or dissipated.
Yeah, how long? Hours? Days?
An hour. Mm-hmm.
So whatever it was that hit you was non-lethal.
Non-lethal. It was like a stun gun. Like it put you to sleep.
Do you think that you mentioned that this was possibly some type of a test or an exercise where they were doing some psychological stuff with you guys? If it was that, what happened to the bullets and the fire?
Well, the bullets and the fire, the next morning, the fire was, the trees were burned. And we saw the ground, there's littered with nothing but bullets, some of the areas.
Did you find any footprints out there?
No footprints. No footprints at all. That was the weird part. I thought maybe there's some guys would be running around and leaving footprints or something.
Yeah.
Marks.
All right, we have to take a break, John. We'll be back right after this. And, folks, when we come back, we'll open up the telephone line so you can call in with your questions or comments. We shall return. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and to my guest, John Vasquez. We're going to open the telephone line for you, and we invite you to call in. The telephone number is 623-237-3814, 623-237-3814. And if you have a question or if you have a comment for John Vasquez, That's the number to call, and the phone line is open. John, how has all of this affected you over the years?
Well, when I think about it or talk about it, I said I feel the same tension, the frightening events, the bizarre happening. It's like a motion picture going over and over again, and I'm telling myself I have to stop. I have to stop this once.
And so it's kind of like reliving it.
Exactly. By being there.
Yeah. All right. Let's go to the phone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Rick from Kentucky.
Hi, Rick.
How you doing, Kevin?
Outstanding, sir.
I've got kind of a comment on the whole thing. Interesting story, John. My background is in electronics technology. I have a degree, graduated in 1971, and at that time, transistors were just coming into the pick. We were just getting to the point we could make a boombox carry around under our arm. It's my firm belief that over the last 35, 36 years, we've had a boost somewhere in our technology that was either given to us or back-engineered from somewhere. I know we have a lot of smart scientists, but I don't think they could have made the leap from vacuum tubes to the integrated circuits we have today without some real intelligent help. And when they make these things, they're going to have to be tested, and I think that may have been what John was part of, a test.
Maybe. What do you think, John? You think you were part of a test?
Well, this is no disrespect to the gentleman here who's calling right now. You know, because I did contact Dr. Stephen Greer, and I requested information from him about a possibility that all this was a reverse engineering test that was going on at the time. And I got his letter in my book that says his educated guess is that this is possible that at that time frame back in 1977, they were trying out some new weapons or new kind of sound waves or, you know, things like this. And, I'm thinking still, it's a good possibility that this whole thing was a test that they were conducting at the time. And you know that my book, I also found that there was a plane called the A-10, which was flown from Nellis Air Force Base. And they, of course, denied that this airplane was there at Lawson Airport, which is a false. And, again, it was under the project called JAWS. It's an acronym for Joint Attack Weapons System. And the Secretary of the Army, Clifford L. Alexander, was present at the same time when this unusual event were taking place. So, you know, again, I'm fighting both sides of the fences to find out the real truth, what took place.
So what you're saying is it could be that they were testing some new weapons. It could be that some of it was back-engineered weapons. And then again, it could have been just a UFO attack. Is that right?
That's a good equation to this whole...
All right. Rick, did you have another question or comment?
No, Kevin. I think that's it. I just want to make...
And what you're saying is that the leap from vacuum tubes to solid-state circuitry was way too much of a leap, way too fast, for it to have been totally terrestrial in origin.
Exactly. We've gone from vacuum tubes to, we can carry our cell phones in our shirt pockets, keychains with the laser lights on them. Lasers were unheard of. It's just all too much. It's too easy. And I think if the government had that help, extraterrestrial or whatever, they would want to keep it for themselves, and they would want to keep it secret. I think that's part of the whole cover-up.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you, sir.
All right. The telephone number is 623-237-3814. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, and we'll be glad to hear from you. Let's go to the telephone, and let's see. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Don calling from Phoenix.
Hi, Don.
How you doing tonight?
Outstanding, sir.
Well, if I'd known you were going to have John on, I wouldn't have missed the first half hour.
Well, you see, that's what happens, Don. I tell people every show, you miss a single second, you miss a universe of information.
How you doing, John?
I'm doing fine, Don. How you doing?
Pretty good. It was good talking to you today, buddy.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I really do. I'm glad I'm on.
Yeah, like I say, I didn't know you were going to be on tonight. I emailed Kevin earlier, and then I got caught up in work, and next thing I know, it's 8:30 here, and I missed the first half hour, and I tuned in, and you're on the
yeah,
air.
Yeah, this happened so fast, too, and I was getting myself ready to go out tonight, but then, again, you know, I got a call from Kevin, and I decided to stay on, and you know, I didn't say anything to nobody except for Mr. Mel Podell at MUFON here in San Diego. So,
well, I tell you, he's got two of the best things going here. You got the best interviewer going and the best interviewee. I mean, you've got one of the best stories, like Kevin says, you know, one of the strangest and
bizarre. bizarre.
I've ever heard.
Yeah.
All right, Don. Did you have a question?
No, I just wanted to call in and say hello. So, thanks, Kev.
All right, you bet. Thanks for the call.
Thanks, Don.
623-237-3814. 623-237-3814. And we will be glad to take your calls, your questions, your comments. No question about it, John. Your story, your account of what happened is one of the most bizarre of any, I guess, that anybody has ever shared with us on this show. Let's go to the telephone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Jerry. I'm calling from Phoenix.
Hi, Jerry.
Hi. Quick question, and I'll go listen on air. This fellow said that they communicated when they were under the building that they wanted to speak to the commanding officer. I'm curious how they communicated. Was it mentally or was it verbally? And was the characterization of their speech, if it was verbally, was it clear? Was it stuttered? You know, how? I'd like to have more detail, I guess, about that communication. And if he knows what was communicated after the fact.
All right. Good deal.
Okay.
Thanks, Jerry. Okay, what about that?
Yes, the way they communicated was through thought, not by speech, but through thought. And most of us picked it up. And again, we talked to ourselves, and we could hear them saying, yeah, we want to talk. They were saying that they want to speak to someone in charge.
Okay, and so, but this was through telepathy. They spoke to your minds.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right, do you know what was communicated when the commanding officer did talk with them? Do you know what they said to him?
No. It was between him and whoever else he was talking to. I wasn't even sure, but he was talking to somebody.
All right.
Someone in charge of them, I guess, you know, and then who was in charge of their battalion or whoever company that they were with, and he was talking to them.
All right. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hey, this is Ryan in Puget Sound.
Hi, Ryan.
Hi, John. Back to this crash out there in Georgia. You know, it just occurred to me that it seems like these things are happening more frequently. You know, it sounds very similar to the one that happened in Needles, California, from what you're describing, is from what the witnesses saw and the response afterward. Obviously, something crashed there. And there's been numerous other incidents where things have fallen out of the sky. And it just occurred to me, it's only a matter of time, but one of these is going to end up hitting in a neighborhood or a public business or something like that, and somebody's going to be injured, you know. It just amazes me that out of all these incidents like this, the Kecksburg crash, numerous other incidents, talk to Robert Wood and Bob Wood for a while, they run the crash retrieval conference, that nothing has hit a public place yet. And once it does, then what are we going to do? You know what I mean? Somebody dies or hit the school or something. But anyways, John, I hope you find the answer to what your question is. You know, I honestly feel like you should contact, you know, I don't know, have you ever considered that maybe they're afraid of you possibly, I mean, have you contacted a lawyer?
Go ahead, I'm sorry, finish.
Well, have you ever heard of Melinda Leslie before?
Melinda Leslie?
Yes.
Yeah, I seen her one time.
Well, she's real good. She focuses on military abductions, and I would just recommend that you. How about Nick Begich or somebody like that? It just seems like the more you try and you can file Freedom of Information Acts, you can call as many people as you want, but it seems like I think you're just going to end up running into a dead end because they're probably afraid that you're going to take them to court. You know what I mean? And you probably could. I think if they do a test like that on you, I think it's shameful for them to do that on somebody. And I wanted to thank you for serving your country, by the way. And I don't think it's your fault or anybody else's fault. And I hope you get to the bottom of it. I'll just take it off the air. Thanks for taking my call.
All right. Thanks for the
thank
call.
Thank you. Yeah,
yes.
I understand fully of his concern. And, yeah, I've contacted every channel that I could think of. I spoke to people in this field, and they all know the story. And, you know, my journey right now is, and my intention is this. I want to find the rest of my friends who I lost contact with. I know that they know something about this. Why they haven't come out? Well, again, that's another long story that I need to finish.
All right, we'll do that when we come back from this break. All right, folks, more with my guest, John Vasquez, right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is John Vasquez. And we are chatting with him about one of the most amazing, astounding stories, reports, events in UFO lore, in UFO information. And John, well, I'll tell you what. Let me open the telephone again. 623-237-3814 is the number. 623-237-3814. We might have time for another call after this one, but let's take this call. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Hello, caller. Okay, let's try that again. Well, Don't know why that didn't work, but anyway, the telephone line is open. 623-237-3814. John, have you? How do you handle the burden of knowing that your story is probably one of the most bizarre that's out there?
Good question. I do my best to keep it locked away, camouflage and concealment. You know, look at it, study it, cover it, and put it away where no one knows where it's at, and I just keep it that way, like putting it in the corner of your mind somewhere. Not to bring it out all the time, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And because it's just a hindrance sometimes. It really is. It slows you down. You don't go by your life the way you want it to. So I don't think about it all the time. I just put it away. Simple as
all right. We'll try to go to the phone line. Caller, your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Bob from California.
Yeah, Bob.
Hi, I had a quick question.
Mm-hmm.
This is for the guest. Was there any kind of smell that you smelled out there before you were firing your AKs at whatever was out there? Did you smell anything interesting like methane or what was the smell out there like? And the second question was, when they were communicating with you on a scale from 1 to 10, 5 being neutral, what kind of benevolence was there behind the communications? Did they seem nice or evil? Thanks.
Okay. What about that? What kind of smell?
Well, yeah. Again, when we're firing, he's talking about firing our weapons. All we could smell was burn of the M16 being fired from our weapons.
Okay, but before you began firing, was there any sort of unusual smell in the air?
Well, there was kind of a laboratory type of smell, a latrine, a laboratory.
And were you near a latrine?
Well, no. We weren't even close to a latrine. I mean, all the latrines are in the barracks. But they had this certain kind of a pungent laboratory smell to the place, you know.
So would you say it stinks?
No. It's just a laboratory. You know, you walk into a laboratory, you got that certain chemical-like smell around the area. It's not that strong, but it's just a little bit of chemical smell to it.
Okay.
Like, and it wasn't pungent or anything like that.
All right, what about the communications? When they communicated with you telepathically, did they seem to be hostile or did they seem to be non-hostile?
Well, I think that they don't understand what hostile or non-hostile mean to them. I don't think they had any kind of emotion.
Yeah, but how did you feel?
How did I feel?
Did you feel that they were hostiles, or did you feel that they were trying to come to some sort of benevolence here?
Well, at that time, when we're firing our weapons and bawling and being angry with them, felt that they weren't that hostile or either. They just were themselves, I guess, just plain and simple. You know, individuals.
When they began to communicate with you telepathically, did it surprise you?
Yes, it did. It did surprise me. I mean, how do they do that? How can they communicate without saying a word? And the communication was not even close to each other. I mean, I wasn't even close to them at all, and they still could talk to me.
And when that happened, did you feel threatened by that, or did you feel that everything was okay?
I didn't feel no threat at all, and to say it was okay, I don't think it was okay. It was kind of unusual again, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't, you know, it just doesn't connect normally.
All right, I want to ask you about during the communication. This is when you had seen them crawling under the buildings.
Mm-hmm.
Did they crawl out from under the buildings and stand and face you guys?
No, they turned around and crawled away from us real fast. Their motion's faster than ours. When we're fighting, I know we run as fast as we can, but these guys were just, I mean, they just crawled really fast, like an animal.
Uh-huh. And where were they positioned when they began to communicate?
again, when they started communicating with us underneath the building, they were like maybe 10 feet away from us or maybe 15 feet away from us.
Okay, but they were communicating with you before they crawled away or after?
After.
Okay, so they're running away from you or crawling away from you and communicating at the same time.
Yeah, they did that.
And how much, if you had to guess the weight of one of these creatures, how much would you guess it weighs?
About 95 pounds, 100 pounds.
So a very slight build.
Mm-hmm.
Were its arms long?
Long, narrow. So were the legs. Long, narrow.
Were you able to see how many fingers it had on each hand?
No. They were crawling so fast, I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it seems like they had the strength of 100 men because I think it was their power come from their thoughts, their minds. They have strength there. They could communicate with you, and they could change your thoughts maybe. I'm assuming they can. But the strength came from there. Their strength is their mind power.
I find it interesting. I mean, you were firing guns at them across the field. You were hitting them. They were falling, but getting right back up. They obviously had some superiority over your weapons, and yet they ran away from you when you confronted them under the building. And that's curious, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And I think it's because also we used a flare, which blinded them too.
Okay, so you used a flare under the building?
Yes, we did.
Did you guys, do you know what a flashbang is?
Yeah, flashbang grenade.
Yeah, did you throw a flashbang under there?
No.
No, just a flare.
Just a flare. Light up the whole place.
Mm-hmm.
And those guys, I guess they reacted to the flare. Because most of the time, even when the choppers were dropping the flares, they were firing at the choppers with these ball lights. I guess they don't like the brightness of the light.
That's curious, too, that they prefer it dark. That's very interesting. I'm not sure it's significant, but it's interesting. Well, John, we've just about reached the end of the show. Man, I wish you all the best in your research of this this UFO crash that happened near Fort Benning in 2006, just being reported out at the end of 2008. And I hope you're able to come up with some good, solid information about that, especially since you say that the picture looks like the thing you saw in 1977 in the event you've just described.
Yes, definitely. It was a bright, intense light. I mean, the picture looks like it's yellowish, but then if you take the filter off of that picture, I think it would be a bright white light just passing around or bending. So now we have digital and we have filters, so we could see exactly what we're looking at. I think this bright, intense light was this thing that we encountered.
All right, very quickly, do you think these things are a threat to us?
That's a good question to ask, and when it comes to threats...
You got to do it fast. We're out of time. Yes or no?
I don't know.
Okay. Stay on the phone with me.
Okay.
All right. Thank you for being with us this evening. Fascinating, fascinating. All right, folks, that's a wrap. And it's time for me to tell you that my friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.